The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Lots of stuff to talk about today. Brock Heward's going to join me in less than 30 minutes to recap yesterday's Seahawks game and what Pete Carroll had to say in his first post-game interview this morning with Brock and Salk. So Brock will join us, the Money Monster quarterback, coming up at 12:30. Lots of news to get to. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Well, that sure was a sad story you had in your newscast about the fire down in Kent.
I know.
Seven horses. And they don't know the cause of that fire.
No.
So seven horses trapped in a barn perished this morning down in Kent. And that's after these horrible fire stories this weekend here in Seattle. And we have no idea the cause of that horse barn fire down in Kent. But the old Elks building in Fremont, they are almost certain that was arson. And then the other story that Ursula mentioned, that massive fire at a warehouse down on the Ship Canal near Seattle Pacific, and we don't know yet definitively if that was arson. The owner of the lumber company that used that warehouse talked to Cairo 7 News.
I got the phone call last night, like, your sheds are completely engulfed, and it was like, I couldn't process that information.
And they said that they clearly saw the fire start in this one shed that people had access to, and as I said, there was clearly an arson not that far away on the Ship Canal with that Elks Club this weekend. Witnesses said this was a massive blaze.
See the smoke? It was maybe 20 feet off from where our house was. So watching it all go over all of where everybody else lives, and then knowing that all the students live right across the street, hearing them having to evacuate, the power going out. Yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
And when it's a four-alarm fire, that is indeed a massive blaze. And the guy who owns the lumber company, he said that they have, you know, just real kiln-dried lumber, and so they're not that surprised that it went up in blazes and burned so hot.
I asked specifically, where did the fire start? And they said they have picture evidence that that was the one and only shed that was on fire when it first started, and it spread from there.
So was this arson? We're still waiting to get some definitive word.
You're talking kiln-dried lumber that's completely dry. We don't sell anything wet. So when it lights, it's 100 feet to the sky.
But the Elks Club, they've already determined was arson. This may have been. We don't know yet about this Kent thing. But we have seen just this increasing level of mentally deranged craziness on the streets of this whole region. As we've had so many blazes that have started in the homeless encampments that have, you know, damaged our infrastructure around here, that all those propane tanks that homeless people had stolen underneath the Magnolia Bridge, that could have been a disaster. And we're just seeing things like this on and on and on all around the region. And all of this at a time when the crime is getting more and more out of control, and the cops are fleeing in droves. Let me get to the next story in our Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
So the Seattle Police still don't have a new contract, and that's because community groups are opposed to a contract that has been negotiated. The Guild and the chief stood up at a press conference weeks ago and said that we've agreed, and the mayor was there too. We finally have agreed to a contract after years of Seattle police officers not having a contract. And now it's on hold because we have a growing number of activists who just simply hate cops. And as I told you on Friday, this is not about police accountability. 940, the initiative that passed, is the most fundamentally anti-cop initiative that's ever been passed in this country. And the message that is going out loud and clear around here is that the controlling political forces of this region are simply fundamentally anti-cop. And so we don't know. The Seattle City Council is going to vote on this contract tomorrow. But we have many city council members, including the socialist who calls cops murderers when they're exonerated in shootings, who just simply don't like police officers. And why is that? Because they have been firmly on the side of anarchists in this region. And you can go all the way back to the May Day rioting of a couple of decades ago when our city council, which was a billion times more reasonable back then, they still were opening city buildings and let's provide a warm place for the anarchists who are bussing in from around the region so that they have a place to sleep at night. And so even back then, when the city council wasn't nearly as crazed, they still were embracing anarchy and anarchists. And it was because then and now, the further left you go, the more anti-cop you get. And Seattle police officers know that. And so there is a crisis in Seattle police. As criminals more and more are taking over the streets, cops more and more are leaving in droves. And I'll tell you about a couple of emails and Facebook messages that I've gotten just in the last 24 hours. One from a listener who I really trust as a source. Dory, I was talking to my nephew, who's been a Seattle cop for years. He tells me that 80 Seattle police officers are quitting or retiring as soon as the new contract goes through because it's easier to wait than submit wage base retroactively after you retire. They owe him back pay around $40,000. There are apparently whole squads not showing up for work. And while I haven't been able to confirm this morning, I will tell you that my colleague Jason Rantz on KTTH, he has also been communicating with a lot of cops, and he's got stories up on My Northwest about the crisis, the exodus in Seattle police, because very few people, not enough good people, want to work there. They got a lot of good people now, but they got a lot of openings where they need more good people. And then this one on Facebook from somebody who says they're a current SPD officer. I'm seeing very little reason to remain an officer with Seattle Police. This contract opposition from groups is mind-blowing. Until, that is, you remember that the CPC was not a permanent body until the city advanced the so-called accountability legislation. This called the community police organization to be permanent but not fully funded. And what do those members want? A way to foray their invented profession of naysaying police into a paid gig. And then he goes on and on and on. They talk about reform, but they fail to remember that we are in full and effective compliance with the Department of Justice. It's taken 4 years to get a contract. And he says, we are losing officers left and right. Bellevue offers a $16,000 signing bonus. Everett's offering a signing bonus. All pay as well or better. Now, I don't know if that's true. I think other surrounding departments do not pay quite as well as Seattle. But then he goes on to say something I know is true. Few have the stressors of SPD. So folks from 1 to 15 years on the job are leaving in droves. I don't blame them. I'm looking at leaving too. I was born in Seattle, raised here, graduated from Seattle Public Schools, live in the city currently, and hope to make this my home. But there comes a point where you just won't do it anymore because why bother? Would you be a Seattle police officer right now? And it's a fair question. And it is troubling when we have a growing political lack of leadership that wants to bring as many drug criminals as possible into the city. And as the cops are depolicing, either out of necessity because they don't have the staffing or because it's their form of protest or because they're afraid of what's going to happen from a paperwork standpoint if they do what used to be routine police work, this is becoming a real powder keg around here. And it's only going to make a difference, not only if you get rid of all 7 Seattle City Council members who are up for re-election next year, but you got to replace them with people more reasonable. Because these current leaders are taking us down an incredibly dangerous path. And the people of this region know it. So not only did we pass the most anti-cop initiative last week, but we also passed 1639, which is raising the gun buying age from 18 to 21 so you can serve our country and carry a gun in Iraq and Afghanistan when you're 18 and 19, but you can't in Washington State or won't be able to once it's implemented. You can have a gun, lock it in your house, have your house be broken into. Somebody steals your gun, uses it in a crime, and you can be criminally prosecuted. It is just a fundamentally anti-self-defense initiative. And so, ironically, gun shops all around here, they are expecting between now and the first of the year, when this initiative will be implemented, they think there will be record gun sales. Because there are a lot of people, I should get a gun. I've been thinking about getting a gun. And now they're all saying, I got to get a gun before this initiative goes in. And so we're going to see, or at least they are anticipating, a huge spike. Concerned citizens at one gun shop talked to Q13 News.
I'm concerned at not being able to access my gun when I need it.
You're not going to tell the criminal, can you hold on a moment, because we have a law that I have to, you know, safely store it in the garage somewhere, and so can you hold on a moment? I'm going to go take it, and I'm going to defend myself. Then we'll talk.
You call the police or things go down, it's less than 1 minute. So those seconds count.
And some people were talking about the irony that I mentioned of 18 and 19-year-olds can go fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they can't have self-defense here in our state?
Ask them to die for our country, volunteer for our military, and yet they can't buy booze, they cannot buy, now in this case, a modern sporting rifle.
So, the people who just wanted to push an anti-self-defense initiative now might see more guns out there than ever before.
I am being liable, not the criminal. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
The language of the initiative is too vague.
So that's what they all told Q13. So expect a massive spike in gun sales because people realize, well, if crime's getting worse and policing is getting more scarce, I better have a gun to protect myself and my family. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Meanwhile, where's our governor when all of this is going on? Jay Inslee. When you see what's happening in your state, when you see a police crisis, when you see crime spikes, when you see drug addiction everywhere, when you see the homelessness skyrocket, the drug vagrants are coming here from other states committing rapes and murders. I'll tell you later this afternoon about the illegal who was free because of sanctuary status elsewhere in the country who murdered three people a couple of days ago. Yeah, sanctuary's working out real well, there and here. So according to the Seattle Times, Jay Inslee is now going to give some thought to running for president of the United States in 2020. They asked him if he is going to pursue the presidency, and his quote to the Times, "We will give some thought to that in the near future. I have not ruled that out, as you know." Jay Inslee believes that he could be president of the United States. And let's face it, a lot of people believe that. Big story, Wall Street Journal today. Hillary Clinton's former advisor, Mark Penn, says that he is relatively certain that Hillary will run for president again in 2020.
The parlor game of who's going to be the 2020 nominee begins today. And I think don't underestimate Hillary's positioning to run again. She's got a 75% approval among Democrats. She's positioned herself with the core of the Democratic base. A lot of Democrats think she was unfairly denied winning the last presidential race. And I think she's going to sit back.
What does that mean? She was unfairly denied winning the last presidential race. Why? Because we have an electoral college? So suddenly enforcing electoral laws or election laws in America is unfair if your side loses? What a bizarre statement. She was unfairly denied because she lost in the category that decides who's president. Only somebody like that.
Back, see how this develops. You've already seen what happened when some of the potential nominees stood up at the Kavanaugh hearing and they looked like amateurs. She's a pro, and she learns, and Clintons never stop until they get where they want to go. And I say, don't count her out. And if she gets in, she will be quite formidable.
Yeah, Clintons never stop before they go where they want to go, even if it's inside a blue dress. Oh, and Howard Schultz, the Starbucks CEO, he has assembled, CNBC is reporting, that he has assembled an elite PR team as Howard Schultz considers running for president. He's going to prepare to release a civic-minded new book. He's considering running for president. If you'd kept the Sonics in Seattle, maybe you'd have a better chance of carrying your home city, Howard. But Howard Schultz could be the next business leader, and that one's been rumored and bandied about for a long time. But now there are signs over the weekend that Schultz is assembling a team so that he could be president. So you got Inslee wants to be president, Howard Schultz, Hillary Clinton. By the way, in an exclusive interview, when I found out that Hillary is thinking about running again, I talked to the late Adrian Balboa, the wife of boxer Rocky Balboa, to see if she would have any advice for Hillary versus Trump if Hillary enters the 2020 race.
Before, there were reasons to fight I could understand, but I don't understand this. Even if you win, what have you won? Apollo's still gone? Why can't you change your thinking? Everybody else does.
Because I'm a fighter. That's the way I'm made, Adrian. That's what you married. We can't change what we are.
Yes, you can.
We can't change anything, Adrian. All we can do is just go with what we are.
You can't go with what you are. Have you read the papers? Do you know what everybody says? It's suicide. You've seen him. You know how strong he is. You can't win.
No, she can't. That's good advice for Hillary. And there is one Democrat who's jumped in the race now. He's a state senator in West Virginia, Richard Ojeda. He just lost he was running for Congress in West Virginia. So he loses for Congress in his home state, but he this morning announced that he is the first announced Democratic 2020 presidential candidate. And Donald Trump, what do you think about Richard Ojeda?
She is running against a total whack.
This is when he was running for the congressional seat, and Trump went to West Virginia to campaign for his Republican opponent. But here's what Trump said about the first announced Democratic presidential candidate.
She is running against a total wacko. Now I've seen this person. You can't have that person in Congress. That person is stone cold crazy.
So that's what Trump thinks about, in all seriousness, the first announced Democratic candidate. And that is your big lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Another tough one yesterday for your Seattle Seahawks. Brock Heward, the Monday Monster quarterback. He's going to drop in next. Tell you what Pete Carroll said about yesterday's game when he talked to him this morning. That's next on the Dory Monson Show.
Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue in it. Check, 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 check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks.
He's going to drop the ball underneath. The ball is caught. It's Jimmy Graham. And that was all Russell Wilson.
Here's Dory Monson.
It's Monday afternoon, and that means it's time for a weekly visit with the Monday Monson quarterback. I'm not used to this, Brock. I'm not used to having you in on Mondays after a loss more than half the time, but that's the situation we're in now this season.
Dory, you've never been a loser.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, your whole life. You've been a winner. It's about winning.
You didn't know me that long ago. Oh, if only you had known, Brock.
Well, I've only known you about the last 10 years or so,
man.
Dory.
Yeah, that's about when things started to turn around. It was rough the first 46 years, though, man. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well, it's weird. It doesn't feel like if you saw 4 and 5 on paper, like if you'd have handed that to you and I when we started these back, you know, in early September, the start of the season, I think we would have both been like, oh, that's tough. But every one of these they have been in.
Yep.
It's not like the NFL that you watched yesterday and you did the pre and the post and you look at all those scores. That's a blowout. That's a blowout. That's a blowout. That's not competitive. That's a blowout. It's about everybody else. And the Seahawks just have found a way to stay in every single game to give themselves opportunities. But 1-5 in one possession games is not going to cut it.
And just critical mistakes down the stretch doesn't cut it either.
Rams rush 4. Russell, look out. Oh, ball no. Stripped away. Russell dives for it. Ball still on the ground. Rams recover back at the 10-yard line. I think he's down at the 10 as Jordan Simmons helped drop whoever picked up the ball. I think it was Dante Fowler. The Rams brought the house. Russell tried to hang on to it and make a play. Ball is stripped away, and the Seahawks may have just watched their hopes roll into the end zone.
And they weren't over because the Seahawks made yet another remarkable comeback. But in the first post-game interview, Pete Carroll was on with Brock and Salk this morning, and you guys noticed what we were talking about on the post-game show. There was an edge to Pete Carroll and his tone after the game yesterday.
Yeah, I was just talking about the nature of these guys, you know, and just so impressed. And the fight is it's exactly that you, the way you want it. And not just that, but just the resolve to put us in position, you know. And unfortunately, you know, this season so far has been these disappointing not finishes, you know, the ones that just don't quite get there, and but they're right there for us. Russell knows how to get it done. We know how to count on it happening. We're all poised for it to happen again. It just didn't get done. So there is no moral victories at all. I agree with your listener. But also there's truth, and we need to stay at the truth, because right now we got to hang. We got to hang tough, and we got to make sure that we hold on to the things that are really good for us to turn those into winning ways.
By the way, I love the language of coaches. Was your dad like this?
No.
Where Pete says, our disappointing not finishes.
Yes.
Because I was really careful about that. I never used negative words. I never talked about losing. I talked about not winning. Mm. And when I heard Pete say that, I thought, that's like classic coach speak there.
And especially him. He is so tuned into that, that language matters.
Yeah. Your dad wasn't like that?
No. Not necessarily. No. My dad was the tough love variety.
Okay.
It was very tough, and he'd wrap it, you know, back around in a little bit of love. And, you know, Pete's got a little bit of that new school, but he did. He had an edge post game. He was positive. He was positive with us this morning. You know, there are things to build on, but this team didn't have margin.
But what he was referencing there was, you guys had gotten a caller earlier today,
oh, yeah,
who said, I'm sick and tired of moral victories with this team.
That's right. I mean, this is a bottom line business, isn't it? Did this thing ever change? Is it about voting or perception or their polls? Or is this about your wins and losses, pretty cut and dried in the NFL? And that caller was right, and Pete tended to agree with him. And if you're going to play this style, as I said earlier, and you just don't have any margin, Russell can't make a mistake. Okay, the defense right now is not what they've been in the past. They're giving up over 7 yards a game the last two games. They don't take the ball away once. The Chargers and the Rams went up and down the field and up and down the field. And if you're going to, you know, stay the course and you're going to run the football, you cannot make mistakes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and the teams they've beat have turned out to have disappointing seasons, almost all of them. The games they've lost against the elite, they're right in it at the end. And Coach talked with Brock about just the attitude.
Oh, we have developed a confidence, and we just got to, these games are tough, man, and the teams we're playing are good, and we got to come through in more ways than just confidence. We got to execute really well and come through just in a number of different aspects of our team, but it's there to be done. I mean, we're going to go in against the Packers, and we're going to know we can run the football, and we're going to go play off of that, and we're going to try to play really good defense against Aaron and see if we can keep him from being the whole show, which, you know, that's what the challenge is. It's a great challenge again.
Any team that I have covered kind of in this analyst role I've done for the last decade, or the teams that I was a part of, Dory, and I know it'll be the same thing for you, that either the teams you coach played on or you have been, you know, evaluating pre and post and talking about, any team worth their salt and that's ever been good goes into a game and says, well, I know we can do this. I don't know if we're going to be capable of playing this way or doing, but I know at the end of the day, man, I can hang my hat on the fact we're going to do this. And that's why Pete's positive right now, because the last few years you've not been able to say that. You haven't. You've had finger pointing. You've had entitlement. You've had breakdowns in any of the phases of the game. There wasn't something that you went into a game and said, man, we're going to play elite defense. Nope, not the last 2 years.
Right.
Well, we're going to run the ball. Nope, not the last 2 years. Well, we're going to throw the ball. Nope, not the last 2 years. And now they're going to go into this game Thursday. I know they're going to run it. And they're going to run it really well. Whether it's Carson, whether it is Penny, whether it's Mike Davis, whether it's Russell, they are going to run the ball. Now they've got to get the complementary pieces off of it, either defense or no mistakes or takeaways, to find a way to win against a good competition.
Yeah, Green Bay Packers, short week, Thursday night, prime time. And by the way, what was this? Jared Goff's audible call yesterday.
I'm telling you, he has jumped up to a really next level of quarterback.
Holly Berry.
Yes.
And then Holly Berry went on Twitter and said, wait, you're screaming my name.
Sure.
Jared Goff said it's my favorite play ever.
Yeah, I'm pretty solid.
Holly Berry.
Yeah, that's a really hot play. That's what that one is called. So.
And then on a much more fun note, you did the Cougar game on Saturday.
I did.
It was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
Fun watching those boys.
Yeah, they are. It's going to be a fascinating Apple Cup. They've got to get through Arizona, and I get to call their game again Saturday night. I'll be on the Palouse late night, 7:30 kick. And the Huskies got to get through the Beavers. They're both favored. They both should win. And then it is going to set up the most fascinating Apple Cup in every single way.
Yeah.
Certainly for us the last 10 years, and there's been a lot on the line, but not like this season. Not with the Cougars, who have, if they win, still a playoff hope. The North Division will be on the line. A Pac-12 championship will be on the line. And you've got a coach on that side and a QB that have and are just playing with your house money, that just could care less, to just having the time of their life.
Yeah.
And then with Peterson and Browning, have just felt the weight of all this pressure and expectations. And yet, in those 60 minutes, one heck of a script is going to be written.
We, on Saturday, I know it's still almost 2 weeks away, but I got out my extension
I saw those
ladder
flags.
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
My wife got out our Husky and Cougar flags.
The house divided.
They are both flying from
yes,
the Monson household right now, Brock. That's how fired up I am for all this.
House divided.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback. Good seeing you.
And I hear you're going to go body paint. Half yourself purple, half yourself maroon, right?
I ain't putty.
You got the gray on top already.
Putty from Seinfeld. No.
You got the golden smile, the gray on top, and then half of you purple and maroon. Let's go.
Daddy, don't do paint. All right, that's Brock Huard. He is the Monday Monson quarterback. So are we going to do this on Friday, or are we going to wait till Monday now? We got a decision to make.
That's a good question. We'll have to figure that out between now and then.
Okay.
We'll
have
we
lots
that?
Of conversation.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Figure it out. Okay. And we got lots more. You're Brock every morning, 7 to 10, 710 ESPN Seattle. Lots more straight ahead is the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
Love to hear your thoughts on any and every subject we discuss. It's the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. One of the things that we've talked about an awful lot, and it certainly is growing in just number of incidents and in scope, and that is the absolute intolerance on the left for anybody who thinks at all differently from them. And we're seeing this particularly on our college and university campuses, which used to be bastions of free thought, where they actually had respect for rebels who dared not think like the mob. Now you gotta walk in lockstep. And let me tell you what's happening right now at Cal Berkeley, which, yes, is crazy, whack job, leftist school, but it's not as crazy as Evergreen State, which we pay for with tax dollars in our state. So on October 31st, the Queer Alliance Resource Center at Cal, they asked the Student Senate to pass a bill condemning the federal government for considering a legal definition of gender that would have to match a person's sex at birth. So the federal government, and we're seeing this a lot in high school sports, where biological boys are competing in girls' sports and winning state championships. And more states, including Washington, you don't have to be transitioning. You don't have to be biologically a female. If you just say you identify as a female, you can compete in girls' sports. And so in many states, we're seeing this, like I said, Connecticut state track champions in the 100 and 200 biological boys in girls sports. So at Cal, the students' resolution asked the university to step up support of transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming students. So 19 members of the Student Senate voted on this, and 18 of them said, yeah, absolutely, we will support the resolution that the Queer Alliance Resource Center has asked us to support. There was one member of the Student Senate, a 20-year-old girl named Isabella Chow. She read a five-paragraph statement, and I've read the whole five paragraphs. It's very thoughtful. It's loving. But she's not walking in lockstep with everybody else. So she told her 18 fellow senators who all voted for the bill that discrimination is never, ever okay. She condemned bullies and bigots. She said she abhorred stereotypes. She called the LGBT community valid and loved. But then she read, that said, voting for this bill would compromise her values and force her to promote groups and identities she disagrees with. Because Isabella, and she stated this very clearly in her five paragraphs, because of her faith, she agrees with the federal government that your gender should be, you know, should match now what it was at birth. Now, again, you can agree or disagree, but to say that that point, and I've told you that a few weeks ago there was a professor, Ivy League professor, who said, yeah, we've had a sudden number of people who said they've had sudden onset gender dysphoria, where their kid is changing gender when they're 13, 14, 15 years old. And they had evidence that was more peer pressure than something real that was happening, that was trendy. And, of course, the Ivy League school said, nope, we've got to pull down your research. We're not even going to allow that to be discussed. And the professor said, but it's scientifically based. That doesn't matter. So Isabella went on to say, as a Christian, I personally do believe that certain acts and lifestyles conflict with what is good, right, and true. I believe God created male and female at the beginning of time and designed sex for marriage between one man and one woman. For me, to love another person does not mean that I silently concur when at the bottom of my heart I do not believe that your choices are right or the best for you as an individual. As I said, you might disagree passionately with this girl. But does that mean she's not even allowed to say the conclusions that she has reached as a member of the Student Senate? Well, she has just a petition with thousands of signatures are demanding her resignation or firing from the Student Senate. On social media, she's just being blasted, labeled a horrible person, a mental imbecile. Her campus political party has severed ties with her because she dared utter something that wasn't approved by the mob. And again, I thought there was a time when rebels were allowed to speak, especially on college campuses, which talk all the time about diversity. Conceptive thought. Fast 15, it's coming up next.